The story this person created is, I'm going to bust my hump to bring in $1 million in new business just to pad Ryan and Amanda's pocketbook. And that was not the case. And if I take extreme ownership and take personal responsibility, that's on me. I didn't educate what we were going to do with that. And personally, it cost Amanda and I personally $1.2 million in total capital.
Welcome to the Midland Money Mindset. This is a podcast that's all about getting your mind right when it comes to all things money. In every episode, we go deep with engaging guests who provide tangible takeaways and a whole lot of joy along the way. I hope you enjoy these conversations as much as I enjoyed having them. Let's dive into today's show. I'm Larry Sprung, your host for the Midland Money Mindset and founder and wealth advisor of Midland Financial. Today's guest is Ryan Blank, founder and CEO of Deviate. Ryan is an expert facilitator with a gift for bringing out the best in people. Currently, he is the performance coach for high-capacity leaders around the world. He and his team have helped organizations rebound from turmoil, scale startups, build cultures for locker rooms, corporations, and world tours. In addition, Ryan has coached executives, rock bands, athletic coaches, and professional athletes, and he even advised a successful foreign presidential campaign. Ryan delivers life-altering coaching and experiences in partnership with the National Football League, the NFL. To date, Ryan has coached club executives and their senior leadership teams from over half of the NFL and the league itself, including our hometown team, the New York Jets. Listen in for some great takeaways about the benefits of becoming a better leader and the impact it can have on your company, your career, and your life. Well, I have the pleasure today of being with Ryan Blank, the CEO of Deviate. I have to say, I'm really excited for this conversation and to share it with all of you. Welcome to the show, Ryan.
Thank you, Larry. I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. So listen, I always like giving our listeners an idea of who somebody is and their background, right? Because we have a lot of entrepreneurs, business owners that listen to our show. And as you know, the entrepreneurial journey probably has not been a straight path. It's been a long and windy one. So we'll talk a lot about Deviate and your work today. But how did you get here? How did you end up being an entrepreneur? What was your path to getting to founding and the CEO of Deviate?
The greatest failure of my entire life, Larry. You ready for it?
I'm ready.
This was not by some grand design. So typically I get the question like, tell us about yourself or what are you up to? What do you do? That kind of thing. And I'm not big on labeling roles for myself outside of husband and dad. That's what I really appreciate. In from a work context though, if I had to label what we do, it's about leadership development. And the question I've been chasing since 2002 is, are you worth following? Because not everyone is. So in the leadership context, it's really hard to work for people who are hard to work for. In the athletic perspective, it's really hard to play for coaches who are hard to play for. And I backed into that. So in the job that I had back in the 2000s, early 2000s, it was time for me to roll off staff. I was working for a national fraternity and doing some really great things. And I enjoyed working there. And I just worked there too long. I remember sitting down with our executive director and board of directors. It was November of 2009. You know that well, because that was when the markets and everything was just kind of going crazy. And they just said, look, we just can't afford to keep you. I was responsible for really a lot of member development. So educational programming and development to grow the ranks in our undergraduates nationally in our volunteer base. And I achieved some pretty significant milestones. That was a game changer, what I believed in the organization. When you do that, when you work for a member organization, you get known and you get known by the right people. So it's pretty easy. You'd be low hanging fruit to pick up. People want to hire people who are a low risk, high probable hire, right? Low risk, but you've got big upside. I'm in. And I happen to be that, but I love your position on joy because I was evaluating those opportunities and my lens was joy. Am I going to experience joy in this job? Yes or no? And it was no, no, no. So eventually I started turning down jobs. I felt so good. I felt like LeBron James when he decided that he was going to go. Remember when he went down to Miami? He was a free agent.
Yep.
There were two gigs that I had in sight that I thought it would be really great. One would have sent me to the West Coast. At 29, I would have had a C-suite title. I don't think that my ego could have handled it, but it sure as heck wanted it at that time. And the other one would have kept me in Virginia as an innovation consultant. So there's a consultancy who does work all over the world, and they help their clients create their next big idea. I turned down the gig out west. A key lesson I learned in leadership was I really like the owner of this business a lot. He's not someone I would willingly choose to follow. So I had to turn the job down. I had this other gig for the consultancy. I had my first paperwork's done. My 2-week notice is done. My first job assignment, I'm going overseas to work with a chocolatier with the staff to help this chocolatier create their next big chocolate idea. And then I had my very first job interview. I was 29 years old. I was told I'd be there for an hour with 6 people. Ended up being a 4-hour, 11-on-1 panel interview that I was not prepared for. And they rescinded their offer. So I had no other choice. I burned every bridge and I was completely devastated. Have you ever had some news come your way where your heart felt like instantly broken?
Of course. I think everybody has had that experience.
That was me. So my wife pulled my hands away from my face as I was crying. I was completely broken. She's like, look, you were going to do your own thing anyway. In 3 to 5 years, it has to be now. So I went out on my own. My buddy named the business. I had no idea what to call it. And I just figured that if you could pour into people, that's how it really got up and running and started in business. Now we're close to 15 years in doing that.
Wow. And can you just share with our listeners, what does DVA do today? What is it all about?
So it's a lot about leadership, executive development, and culture. So typically, if you hear of an organization who really wants to get their culture right, we're typically that phone call. Or in the world of sport, we're typically the ones who are coaching the coaches, both in they have a safe place to work things through and we have a model. So we have both a mindset and a curriculum that we can teach for what does it mean and what does it take to be a leader worth following. So I'm spending most of my time working in the National Football League, both on the sports side and the business side, because it all translates because it's all human.
Sure. Listen, culture, I think, is most important. We're going through the process of expansion in our organization. And I tell new candidates all the time or new people that are looking to join us, culture is by far the biggest differentiator for us. If the culture's there and there's a fit, great. We can continue the conversation. If not, it's probably not going to happen. Actually, I could tell you it's definitely not going to happen because I've heard people say like you should surround your culture with a wall that cannot be scaled, right? Because you want to keep that all in your organization. So let me ask you a question because your tagline, off track on purpose. Why the tagline? Why off track on purpose?
I wish there was a really great story behind it, truthfully. So when we started the business, a friend of mine, in his name's Chris Dillion in Chicago, I didn't have a name for the business. And he called me as I was getting ready to actually submit the paperwork to become a legal entity. I had everything filled out but the name. And he's like, you have to call your company Deviate. You're the type of person that comes into someone's life and they finally deviate. It's almost like they didn't realize that they were living in their plan B life. Then here you show up and they have this deviation. Got it. Deviate's the name. Now the website itself, deviate.com, whoever owns it wouldn't sell it to me for any amount of money. So I had to think of it. What's a catchy tagline that represents a little bit about what we do? And that's off track on purpose. So if you're talking to me, we're going to take you on a journey off track purposefully to get you to deviate and stretch where you are to where you want to be. And I want you to try on some new things. So that's where it came from.
Love it. Love it. That's great. So listen, you talk a lot about empathy and as the most important leadership skill. Why do you believe that to be?
Here's what's really fascinating. First, we have to define what empathy means. And it's about perspective and proactively seeking others' perspective. And it's the perspective taking. A lot of times in business, people get empathy mistaken for sympathy and pity. That's not what I'm talking about. One of the things that we believe is people need to feel heard before they can actually listen. And when they feel a part of something, when you take a moment and there's a situation and you pause and you come from this place of curiosity and you allow that person to share from their perspective, all of a sudden they feel heard and they feel a part of. Psychologically, one of the most harmful things you will ever do to someone is exclude them. Oftentimes that's never our intention, but that's what happens. So a way that we can get in front of that is through exercising empathy and seeking other people's perspective first. so they understand that they matter and they feel a part of something and they're included.
So how does that, just so people understand, and we could give them a side by side here, right? You said we don't want to mistake empathy for sympathy, right? Two very distinct and different things. So if you could just for a moment, what's the differentiator there? So empathy is being able to give that person a voice, listen to them, understand them before you even kind of speak or respond and get a sense for where they're at. What is sympathy and how do those differentiate?
Yes, you're right. I want you to ask, help me understand. Hey, what's your take on this from your perspective? How did you see it? Hey, here's what the numbers are. What's your read on that? And your thought on that is what? So we did what well? Okay, the growth opportunity would be what? You're seeking and you're gaining information and they're feeling heard. Sympathy is, so what happened? Oh, it did. Oh my gosh, I feel so bad. I feel so sorry for you. Oh no, let me wipe this away. That's the whole sympathy piece. It's relevant in many situations from a leadership context organizationally. That's not what they're looking for or needed. And that's why people tend to get away from empathy because people get those two mistaken. Like they have to feel like they're shedding a tear and come from a place of significant vulnerability weakness.
I think to some degree, it's also easier and probably a cop-out to be sympathetic than empathetic, right? It's easier to just say, oh, I'm really sorry for you, blah, 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 rather than saying, oh, let's talk about how can we figure out a way to get past this or fix this. Or there's a lot more involved with, I think, taking the empathetic route than taking the sympathetic route. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah. If you think about it from a factor of time, to your point, the sympathy piece, maybe that's a 30-second conversation. You're like, oh, nice little put a bow on it. I'm done. The empathy piece may be a 3-minute conversation. So you're like, wow, so much longer. Oh my gosh. And on the back end, what does that actually save you? It creates a moment where someone feels heard, seen, and they are part of something. So it's certainly, yeah, in the moment, feels like the strain. Do I really have the time to do this? And you don't have the time to afford not to, because eventually what happens when people don't feel heard, they start pulling their love and trust away. And I don't talk about like love like I have for my wife or you might have yours. I'm talking about Larry doesn't listen anyway. I'm not even going to do that. And collaboratively, that's not the culture that you have and what you stand for. So it's different. And that's why when people experience that, that's how they start to withdraw. And I think isn't there like a term called like quiet quitting? Have you heard this?
Yeah. It was big during the pandemic. There was a terminology similar to that that was along those lines. Yeah. I think you have to look at that 3-minute versus 30 seconds as an investment, right? You're making an investment in yourself. You're making an investment in the person that's across the table from you, and you're making an investment in your organization by having that longer conversation, I think.
That's right.
I've heard you say that you teach people how to treat you. Would you explain what you mean by this?
When you heard it the first time, do you remember where you heard it the first time? Was it with Aaron? So, okay. If you had to put your own thought and context to that in your own interpretation, what would that sound for you?
I think to me, what it means, my interpretation is that how you act, how you react, things that you do on a daily basis is basically a energy, or you're giving off how you want others to treat you, or what your level of expectation of how people are going to treat you, because you're giving off a certain way. If you're standoffish, that's going to give off the energy that people shouldn't approach you. Or if you're too involved in people's lives, they become more friends than co-workers. That's my view. I don't know if it's right or what your intentions were, but
yeah. You teach people how to treat you. So a lot of times I'm spending a lot of my time right now is helping CEOs on boundaries. Well, if you let people cross over your boundaries, you actually don't have a boundary. So you teach people how to treat you. You know, hey, we're not doing that. That's not how we do business here. But here's something that we can do. Or if you set a clear expectation and it's a known expectation and people don't follow through, and they don't hit the expectation, and you're like, oh, okay, well, that doesn't sit well with me. And if I let that sit and I don't have the real-time adult conversation, I'm going to continue to get that behavior because it's okay. It's okay if I miss these milestones that Larry set for me because he doesn't really care. That's not true. So you teach people how to treat you is, hey, should you believe that you may fall short of that expectation before the actual deadline, I want you to get into communication proactively. And that looks like this, this, and this. And this is important because of this reason. Should you fall short of this, the collateral fallout is this and this, and it puts a strain on the business, what we've got going on. I'm holding us, all of us, to a high standard, which include myself. And it's important that we set that president so people understand, like, okay, these are the expectations. Culturally, we found that there are two major factors that erode culture. One, those are stories. So that would be a negative narrative. I'm in the office. I'm walking in the hall. Larry's walking toward me. He doesn't look at me. I say, hi, you don't acknowledge me. And then I go to my cube and guess what's happening? I've now created this warfare in my mind that you don't like me. I'm probably going to lose my job. Right. That's a story. I don't know how your morning went. You could have had a terrible morning, or you could be thinking about, oh, I have this really great investor coming in that I'm really excited to bring to the portfolio. Gosh, this is super exciting. And you could just be daydreaming and thinking about what's ahead. So stories, those are negative narratives that tend to come from people's insecurities. We all have insecurity. And the second thing that gets in the way of culture are stealth expectations. A stealth expectation is an expectation that you have of someone that you actually don't share. And when they break the expectation, you get frustrated and you take out your frustration on someone, but they didn't even realize it was an actual expectation to begin with. Are you a baseball fan by any chance?
We're like a one sport household, Ryan. We're hockey all the way. But I do watch the World Series when it comes down to that. I just don't have the patience for the long season.
Same. And growing up in Flint, Michigan, so I was I'm still a Tiger fan, and I'm the same. I don't even know if I watched any of the World Series. The reason why I bring up baseball, you know how baseball has all these unwritten rules?
Yes.
That most people know, but if you don't know and you break them, then you're just seen as this terrible person, but you didn't know, but it's not the same thing. That's how stealth expectations work, which again goes back to you teach people how to treat you. It's like if we had, my wife and I travel for work. And if we leave and we hire a house sitter to watch over our house and dogs, and we come back and the house isn't vacuumed, right? And I'm frustrated. Well, if I never asked the house sitter to vacuum the house while we were gone, that's a stealth expectation. That's actually on me.
Right.
So again, it's about clarifying those expectations up front.
Gotcha. Makes a lot of sense. And I think one of the things we've done here is we've instituted core values. So we have a handful of core values. And when somebody's falling short, it's not like, hey, you're doing this wrong, this, that, and that. But what you're doing is that living up to this core value, right? And it gets them thinking, well, no, we need to be. This is what we need to do to run the business. And then it becomes less of a me telling them and more of a, hey, we all agreed that these are the core values and this is what we're going to live up to as an organization. So let's check in and make sure that we're hitting all those marks, which I think is very similar to what you're saying as well.
It's so important that you do that, Larry. And I have to just applaud you for doing that because so many organizations, any organization, doesn't matter if you're an athletic organization or business, doesn't matter, is when there isn't a standard that is actually defined and understood, people have nothing to actually live up to and lead up to. And when you have that, now you have the barometer. The cool thing is by doing that, the number one thing, a buddy of mine studies workplace anxiety. And the number one thing that creates workplace anxiety is people not knowing what their boss expects of them. And what you've done is you've laid out the framework. You and the staff have laid out the framework of what it means to be in good standing and be a great teammate. And should someone fall short of that predefined standard, then you come in for intervention in a timely manner. And essentially the way you're describing is that they're coaching themselves up. And the next thing is that we have to do is when you do that, it creates awareness. And the number one rule of coaching is the client in leadership, right? The client, the staffer always does the work. And so then you would say something like, so what are you going to do about it? And they're actually identifying their pathway forward in growth. So I just appreciate what you're doing for your people. It speaks to your heart.
I want to take a quick break from the show to talk to you about our latest best-selling book, Financial Planning Made Personal. It breaks down complex financial concepts into simple, easy-to-follow steps that anyone can understand. Everyone has a unique financial journey, and this book can help yours. Do you have your copy yet? If not, please go to financialplanningmadepersonal.com and order one today. And I have one more question for you. What did you do today that brought you joy?
Appreciate that. Yeah, it's all about the people, in my opinion, which I know you're aligned as well. So I have to ask, how did you end up working with the New York Jets? How did that come to be?
It's like family for me. So imagine this. Here we are. It's late 2023. And in this moment, in some way, shape, or form, we've worked with 23 NFL teams, right? In January of 2019, this is how many NFL teams I know. Zero. And the first one that took a chance on me and Amanda was the Philadelphia Eagles. And it just came about because now a very close friend, her name is Jen Cavanaugh. She's the senior vice president of marketing. She was hired. She came from NBC Universal New York City. She wanted to do an offsite retreat. And her assistant knows me. Her husband and I've mentored him and they want to do an offsite. So that's how it happened. So I went into Philly, did an offsite, which went well. So I did another one and then another one and another in the same off season. And one of Jen's peers, Catherine Carlson, who's now with BSC, which is in Brooklyn, the parent company for the Nets, she was the senior vice president of revenue and strategy there and did an offsite for her. That led into her telling the people, the National Football League home office in club development about me. Just so happened in October of 2019, they were having a club development summit. So imagine all of the chief revenue officers and their top lieutenants are in an audience. And then there's me on stage. So Jen and Catherine got us our big break into the Eagles and then became our biggest advocate, both inside and out. And how we end up working with the Jets is I was getting ready to do my keynote. I got to the room early, want to scope things out. I was probably like a session or two away from hitting the stage. And this gentleman's walking around and I could tell that he was somebody. He looked like somebody from a team. I think he probably had a pin on. I couldn't see what it was. And he was lost. I was like, what are you looking for? And he's like, oh yeah, I need to go to the Magnolia room. I'm like, oh, let me take you there. So I'm walking him to the Magnolia room where he had a particular meeting. Come to find out it was Ian Lasher, who's the senior vice president of corporate partnerships for the New York Jets. And when I got off stage, Ian came up to me. He's like, you are the talent. And then here you are. You walked me to this room. And then that spurred a great relationship with Ian. And then we had the pandemic. We stayed in touch. When the pandemic happened, we lost about 85% business overnight. That's when the NFL shut down. So Ian's like, hey, well, we can do something remote. And so it started with Ian and his people. And then it went on from there. So it's all about relationships. And I have a mindset of good work breeds more work. Now, Florham Park, when I have the opportunity to go there, is like home. And I truly love those people there. They're great folks.
Well, listen, I'm more of a Giants fan, but I will say this. We have a lot of Jets fans as listeners. So I will respectfully ask you to impart the same wisdom you did with the Eagles to bring them a championship. Hopefully you can impart that same wisdom on the Jets and bring them a championship soon because they're dying for one.
I think it was 1969. The infrastructure that they have there as far as leadership are very talented. I love Robert and Joe and Jaime, and what they do is pretty tremendous in the heart space that they have. So sad of what happened, how the season played out. Excited for offseason and what next year looks like and to see actually how the growth of the team for the remaining, I think there's maybe like four games. I will say though, my best friend did play for the Giants.
Okay. Who was that?
His name's Carson Dock. We grew up together. He was a long snapper.
I remember the name. Fairly recently, right?
Oh, no.
Fairly recently?
His rookie year was, I think, so he and Tyree, they went together. So I guess that was 2003.
Okay. Because I've had Super Bowl champion, two-time Super Bowl champion Perry Williams on the show, New York cool. Giant. He's a friend of mine. He works at one of the local colleges here and teaches sports and business. And I go in usually once or twice a year to speak to his classes.
That's awesome.
Become a good friend of mine. Yeah, it's good stuff. So let's talk about this for a second. 80% of U.S. businesses don't make it past 10 years. How do you feel communication skills can help business owners help them end up on the right side of this staggering statistic?
Isn't it interesting? So you're like, well, why is it? Why is it that all these small businesses are failing? And the number one reason why is poor communication behavior. And we think communication's simple. Larry speaks, I listen. I speak, Larry listens, and we're done. That's actually not how it works. So I was working with a college football coach, a D1 coach, right? And we were talking about communication. He just read a study that essentially the study was that if your audience can actually hear and retain 40% of the message that you're sharing, you're a pretty good communicator. Imagine that, 40%.
Right.
What's interesting is the easiest thing leaders can do in any context, and it works at home. My wife and I do it with our four-year-old son. It can work at work. It doesn't matter. Is the worst question that typically is asked that creates a trap, a false belief that you are on the same page is any close-ended question that you ask someone in a communication experience. So in this instance, it would be, do you know what I mean? Do you know what I mean? That is the worst question. Or it can be like, does that make sense? Are you with me? Anything that's a yes or a no. The reason is in communication, if I'm sending a message, I know what my intention is. If you are receiving a message, your audience, they have an interpretation. The only time you effectively communicate is when those two match. When someone is asked, do you know what I mean? They might say yes. And they would say yes because they think they have an understanding of their interpretation. But it doesn't mean their interpretation, which can be flawed by their insecurity, it may not match your intention. What's interesting is oftentimes I'll say I'm in front of a huge audience and I'll say, have any of you ever been asked the question, do you know what I mean? And in your heart of hearts, the answer was no, I don't. And you said yes. And it's like almost every hand goes up, including mine. Well, why is that?
They don't want to feel wrong.
They don't. And like for me, I don't want to feel dumb. As a leader, you can prevent that from happening. Because we know it doesn't matter what I say, it only matters what Larry hears. So as I'm trying to have an end cap in the conversation, I just simply ask, what are you hearing? What did you hear? And I'm doing it in a soft, comforting, welcoming tone versus being harsh and judgmental. Other questions that you could ask is like, hey, Larry, gosh, we had a great conversation in the last 30 minutes. In your own words, how would you summarize this conversation?
Yeah. What are your takeaways?
Bingo. The highlight for you, our conversation has been what? And then they send it back to you. And then you can decide what they're sharing. Does that match what my intention is? The answer is yes. And if it's no, it's the messenger's fault. It's not the listener's fault. And then you would just say, hey, look, clearly I misspoke. I want to give that another go. And then you do it again. That's why. And that, I believe that in business, it's operator error.
Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. So one other thing along the business line, because entrepreneurs, people who are successful, many of them, if not all of them, are goal-driven. I understand you talk about stretch goal versus strain goal. So for those listeners out there that are avid goal setters, right? They may have even just set their goals for 2024 as we're having this conversation and it's going live. What's the difference there between a stretch and a strain goal that may prompt them to relook at how they kind of position themselves for this year?
Now, you can clearly articulate this better than I can. And so the layman is the law of diminishing return, right? And we know that it exists. And in certain aspects, there are higher thresholds of the law of the, everything can translate to the law of the diminishing return. Push-ups, alcohol, right? You name it, even goals. A stretch goal would be, what is something that I could achieve that is a little bit scary, that really makes me flex, saying, oh, that would be a stretch goal. Now, obviously, I can't put numbers to that, but let's say that we're at 100 million. And a stretch goal could be, and let's say we've been around 100 million. It's been relatively flat for a couple of years. So a stretch goal might be 110 million, right? A strain goal would be a goal that's set so far, you're working so hard that you actually will hit a level of fatigue and burnout, and you will kill yourself and your people in the long run. So that may be a stretch goal being 110. A strain goal could be like 132. So the reason is that we have to be in the place of creating the goal in a way that, again, is this going to scare me or not? Is this actually realistic? Like, what would it actually take for this to happen? And here's what's fascinating. What people need to remember is this is what leaders need to do, especially entrepreneurs. When there is a goal, you have to educate your people the consequence of the goal. And there's actually two forms of consequence. So this is where a lot of leaders lose their people. So remember, the word consequence is a neutral word. When we look at the psychology of it, it just means an outcome. When you have a goal on the front end saying, our goal is 110. When we do this, the upside is this. Everyone's going to get a raise. We're going to fill in these two positions. At the end of the year, there's going to be a holiday bonus for $2,500. And we're going to remodel the office kitchen. Whatever the case is, people need to know where is that money going and how that's being used. Conversely, they need to know the other consequence would be the downside consequence. Should we fall short of this mark, this is going to put a strain on our business. And the strain could look like something like this. The decisions as the CEO that I would need to make would be around this capacity so people can understand what's at stake. I'm finding that communicating in an effective way the consequence is more important than really deciding, is this a stretch or a strain?
Right. Because they don't really care about that. They care about what's the upside and what's the downside, right?
Yeah. And here's the thing is, sadly, Amanda and I had to learn this lesson ourselves, because at one point we had a pretty large staff. And in an exit interview, when someone was separated, it shared that their sales goal is $1 million. You know, in 6 months, they brought in $0 of revenue. No, in 9 months, zero, Larry. You would have thought that I would have done everything correct to set that person up for success. And a few things that I learned from that was, A, that cost us a lot of money. B, it's like, okay, so that bought me about 12 PhDs in the School of Hard Knocks. What did it teach me? It taught me that if it's not written, it doesn't exist. I had most of the right conversation and it wasn't documented in a way to follow up. So to hold someone to it, I'm sure that your core values and your cardinal principles are written down. Mm-hmm. Got it. Then the second component was, I never educated that person, when you bring $1 million in, here's what's going to happen to the business. I wasn't going to pay myself anymore. What I did when I failed to communicate, I opened the invitation for the staff member to create a story. Remember, we talked about stories previously, and the story this person created is, I'm going to bust my hump to bring in $1 million in new business just to pad Ryan and Amanda's pocketbook. And that was not the case. And if I take extreme ownership and take personal responsibility, that's on me. I didn't educate what we were going to do with that. And personally, it cost Amanda and I personally $1.2 million in total capital. Mm-hmm. Not fun. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for sharing and being vulnerable and sharing that example. I think that's excellent. So I have to ask you, America's Funniest Home Videos, what's the deal with that?
Oh, gosh. I won. So I was at a staff outing. This is, gosh, I don't know, maybe 20 years ago. And for me, you can't just go to an event and not have an event at the event. Have you ever seen those fake scratch-off tickets? Lottery tickets? Yeah. So I found a magic shop. That's where you buy those. And the short story is I had all these scratch-off, all these lottery tickets, and there's about 60 people, and one of them was fake. There were probably four people out of 60 that knew the prank, and the person with the most positive, volatile energy was the one that got the fake ticket. We recorded it, and Larry, he went bonkers, and it was insane. And one of the things I never thought of until after the fact was, when you do a prank on someone, know like, A, what's too far and when you should cut it off. We're like 12 minutes into this thing. And then I'm getting ready to close it down because my wife is in the distance. She's like, you got to stop this, right? I'm trying to close this prank down. There's a camera right in his face. Remember those point and click cameras? Not even your phone.
Yeah.
All of a sudden in the back, I hear someone go, call your parents. So he calls his parents and he's so matter of fact that he won, and come to find out he didn't. And his reaction when he read it was amazingly horrific. I almost got fired. Then I submitted it to America's Funniest Home Videos. It was probably a 12-minute video. 2-3 months later, I got contacted by the producers. Now I thought this was him getting me.
Right.
It was real. ABC called. They really liked the video. I told him about it. He thought I was lying. So then he had obviously get a hold of ABC. And they flew me, our cameraman, and Mark, who the prank was on Mark, out there. And we won the show. We gave him all of the winnings, 10 grand. We wrote it, our share to him. Dude, what's crazy is he was doing a full 100% commission job at that time, doing commercial real estate. And that was the seed to keep him able to do it. Now he's the senior vice president of CBRE in Chicago. It's cool. Wow,
amazing.
Yeah.
What a great story. Thank you. So listen, it's been a great conversation, Ryan. We end each of our shows by asking each of our guests the same question, because this is the Midland Money Mindset and we're all about joy. And that is, what did you do today that brought you joy and put you in the right mindset for success?
I wake up at 5 every morning. And at about 5:02, our son woke up and he wasn't feeling well. So my normal routine went completely sideways, and I gave myself the gift of the present moment with him. And what gave me joy was he and I were connected for 2 hours, and I was able to take care of him and filled my heart. And now he's feeling a lot better. So spending time in the present moment with our son. And yourself?
Amazing. So for me today, I took 10 minutes out and meditated. That's been the extent of my joy thus far. But my big joy is going to be coming later tonight, because my older son right now is en route from Philly to, at this very moment, coming home for the holiday break. And I'm looking forward to spending some time with him. That'll bring me a lot of joy later this afternoon, for sure.
That's great.
So Ryan, thank you so much for taking out your time. We're going to have all of your information in the show notes, but if people want to learn more about you, learn more about Deviate, connect with you, what's the easiest and the best place for them to do that?
Well, if you're on LinkedIn, I'm on LinkedIn. So it's Ryan Blank, B-L-A-N-C-K. Obviously, our website is offtrackonpurpose.com. That's probably the path of least resistance, or info@offtrackonpurpose.com will make its way to me, and look forward to staying in touch. That's for sure.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time, Ryan. I appreciate it, and enjoy the day.
Thank you. You too. Thanks, Larry.
I want to thank Ryan Blank for being a guest on the Mintland Money Mindset. Ryan's work with companies, sports teams, and people shows how improving culture and having a solid strategy can have a huge impact. Ryan helps develop leaders and cultures that people love. It's all about building receptive audiences, because if they aren't listening, you aren't leading. Ryan Blank and Deviate can be found across most social media platforms, and all the contact information needed to find them can be found in the show notes. Thank you for joining us this week on the Mintland Money Mindset. Make sure you visit our website at mintlandmoneymindset.com and smash the subscribe button so you don't miss a show. We encourage you to help others find our valuable content, and please don't keep us a secret. You can also schedule an Is There a Fit call right from our website, or by using the link that you'll find in the description section of your podcast player or app. And be sure to join us for our next episode to learn more about getting your mind right when it comes to all things money.
The opinions voiced in the Mintland Money Mindset Show with Lawrence Sprung are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested into directly. Investing involves risk, including possible loss of principal. No strategy ensures success or protects against loss. To determine what may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial or tax advisor prior to investing. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Guests on the Mintland Money Mindset Show are not affiliated with CWM LLC.